And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests has an interesting subject, no two of which are related. My next guest is an internet entrepreneur, a video podcast host, a flash/action script guru, and a computer book author, including books on Apple's Macintosh computer. We'll discuss the legacy of Steve Jobs that he leaves behind after his years at the helm of Apple. And if you have any questions or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Gary Rosenzweig is the founder, chief engineer of Clever Media, an internet content creation company specializing in web-based games and video podcasts. Gary is the producer and the host of MacMost, an Apple enthusiast website, and a video podcast that teaches people how to get the most from their Macintosh, their iPod, and their iPhone. Gary has published 13 mass-market books on Shockwave, Flash, and the Macintosh computer. Recently, he penned the MacMost.com Guide to Switching to the Macintosh. Originally from Philadelphia, Gary graduated from Drexel University in 1992 with a degree in computer science. That's right. Then went on to get his master's degree in journalism and mass communications from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He now resides in Denver, Colorado, joining us from Denver. Hi, Gary. How are you today? Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Well, great. It's great to have you, and thank you so much for being here. It's kind of a sad time, however, in the Apple community with the passing of Steve Jobs. He has been eulogized throughout the media. I mean, some have called him the greatest inventor of our time, this generation's Thomas Edison. Others have called him a magician, a master showman. How will you remember Steve Jobs and his contributions to society, Gary?
Well, I think the comparison to Thomas Edison is pretty good because, he changed so many different things. From the very beginning, just really introducing the personal computer for the first successful one. Then he went on to change all these other industries, and not all through Apple, too, because, introducing the personal computer, then he went on to change personal computing forever with the graphical user interface, bringing it to us in the Macintosh. That's still how we use computers today. But then he went and changed the film industry with Pixar.
Right.
And then he returned to Apple and then continued to do it because he changed the music industry, how we listen to music with the iPod. And then he changed how people sell music with iTunes. Then he went and changed retail with the Apple stores. A lot of people credit him for saving shopping malls and for changing how retail stores work. And then he went and changed the mobile phone industry. Mobile computing industry, and his greatest contribution may actually be something we don't fully realize yet. It may be the iPad itself, because I think that's just starting to actually change the way kids learn at schools and businesses operate and people interact with the internet and each other.
Well, now, Gary, I agree with everything that you had to say. You forgot he also changed the book publishing industry with the iPad because of the impact that he had there. But I'm going to challenge you a little bit on this Thomas Edison thing, because unlike Edison was a pure inventor.
Mm-hmm.
He was, 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration.
Right.
He invented the incandescent light bulb after, I think it was 10,000 attempts to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Jobs, brilliant as he was not an inventor. He was a collector. He did not invent the graphical user interface. As we know, that was invented at Xerox's Park facility. He just blatantly went there, saw it, and commercialized it. In fact, that's what he did with a lot of the stuff that he was out there. So I take a little bit of umbrage when they compare people to Edison. I'm not discounting Steve Jobs' brilliance. I think he's brilliant at seeing how you can apply things to the everyday. But I can't remember a product that he just flat out invented. Is there one that I'm overlooking?
Right. Well, you have to remember, in both cases, they had big teams working for them, right? Apple's just really a big research and development company, and Edison had his company as well with tons of people that he handpicked to come in and work on inventions. And a lot of the ideas were Edison himself, and some of them were just internal to his company, and he championed them. So you've got, I think, more of the inventor in Edison and, more of the leader in Jobs. But I guess the impact, I think you just the impact that they'll have now and in the future. They're similar in that way.
Yeah, we're only beginning to feel the impact that Steve Jobs has. My guest is Gary Rosenzweig. We're talking about the passing of Steve Jobs and the legacy that he leaves behind. Now, when you were last on the show, Gary, I asked you to comment on this. I asked you, so much of Apple's mystique and its success is tied up in Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. What happens to Apple when Steve Jobs leaves or retires? Now, no way am I trying to imply that I'm prescient with that particular question, but I think the question is still valid. What happens to Apple now that Steve Jobs is dead?
Well, hopefully his legacy will live on. You know, one of the things he did recently was establish this university inside of Apple where he's trying to teach Apple executives basically how he ran things. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I know we did the same thing at Pixar, not necessarily teaching people how he did things, but, you know, how the creative people at Pixar worked. So he did do something to try to keep things going, you know, after he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to have to go and see if it worked. Only time will tell.
Well, he's got some good leaders there. Tim Cook is certainly a great leader, having run Intuit before he ran Apple Computer. Jonathan Ive is arguably the best industrial designer that this century has seen, and possibly of last century as well. And certainly there are products in the pipeline that Steve Jobs had his thumbprint on before he passed away. So within the next 12 months, maybe even as many as 18 months, clearly whatever we see coming out of Apple is going to have Steve Jobs' thumbprint all over it. The question is, who will be able to step up and innovate? Who's going to pull the pieces together in the same way that Steve Jobs did now that he is gone?
Right. I mean, it's up to Tim Cook. He seems like he's going to be CEO for at least the next 10 years. And that's the way they've set things up. And, you know, we have to remember, Tim Cook worked alongside Steve Jobs for the last, I think it was 14 years. So, you know, it's not exactly like somebody stepping in to fill the shoes. It's somebody that's been there the entire time. And on those other people you mentioned, like Jonathan Ive, have been there for a long time, working alongside Steve Jobs. They certainly can ask themselves the question, well, you know, what would Steve Jobs do, you know, in making design or management decisions, and, you know, come up with a better answer than any of us could, because, you know, they knew him and worked alongside with him. So then a lot of the things that Steve Jobs did over the last 10 years or so, we're probably the product of getting advice from these same people. So it wasn't all his show, and you know, most of those people are still running things at Apple. So.
And that is an encouraging thing. Gary Rosenzweig is my guest. Now, Gary, of all Steve Jobs' innovations, his products, his achievements, which one stands out in your mind as the most important?
Well, I mean, besides his original achievement of, you know, him and Steve Wozniak, you know, bringing about the personal computer with the Apple II. I mean, that's such a huge one. It's hard to top. You know, the music industry is the music industry. It's not necessarily something that affects business. It's more something that affects people's personal lives. So I'd have to probably go with, you know, the iPhone, because it really changes computing. It moved things from the desktop into a mobile device that we were previously only doing on the desktop. I mean, people always compare Microsoft and Apple, right?
Right.
The operating system. And, you know, Windows had 90%+ and Mac had less than 10%. But with the iPhone and with iOS, now suddenly if you just look at all operating systems that people actually use in a computing device, I don't know what the number is, but, I certainly don't think Microsoft's anywhere near the size of Apple now in terms of operating systems that are, you know, being used.
On mobile devices, there's no way. I mean, I'd say that the tables are turned. It's 90% iOS. Well, that's unfair, too. The numbers that I read, it's 43% iOS,
yeah.
Another 40-something percent of Android.
Right.
And also, the balance is made up of the others that as well. Where the phones are ringing right now, we've got a caller, Gary from Oxnard. Gary, how are you today?
I'm fine, Billy.
Well, thanks so much for being a loyal listener. You have a question for Gary or for me?
Yeah, I know that they said something about Steve Jobs have a lot of patents, but what kind of manager he was, where he was always calm under pressure, or was he always like, you know how some people, they just don't know how to, you know, stay calm? It's like you were talking about, like Edison with all his patents, and I know that Steve Jobs had a lot of patents, and it seemed like, you know, like I heard this saying by Thomas Edison. When they were talking about making a battery, but he tried it so many different ways, but he knew which way not to make stuff.
Well, yeah.
I just want to know what kind of a personality, like, Do you know anything about whether he was, like, calm under fire, or was he, you know?
You bring up one of the most important parts of Steve Jobs and his management style. Gary, I'm going to let you field this one. What sort of manager was Steve Jobs? And I think you have to answer this question in two parts, don't you?
Right, yeah, because certainly there's plenty of evidence that early on, in his first 10 years or so with Apple, he had great difficulty with this. I mean, it's been pretty well documented that he would, you know, yell at employees and push people to work long hours and basically have unreasonable demands. And then, the thing was, after he was kicked out of Apple, and he did Pixar, did Next, and he came back, he seemed to have changed and matured in that, in his management style. And you didn't hear reports like that. You heard more reports of, you know, admiration and how he, worked really well with people. So we don't really know, because Apple's a little bit secretive in terms of internal stuff. Maybe we'll find out more in the biography that's coming out later this month. Be interesting to see if it's an authorized biography, so he got to kind of say what goes in it a little bit, but, you know, we'll have to see if he talks more about it, because we're missing some pieces of understanding of how he was like that.
And we will, and we're going to try to get the biographer on the show as well to talk about that biography when it comes out next month, November of 2011. Gary, back to you if we can. And Gary, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Thank you for being a loyal listener. But my guest, Gary, you talked about the different fields in which Steve Jobs had an impact, and you reeled them off very nicely. There was computing, telecommunications, music, movies, book publishing, and retail. Of all of these areas, probably retail is the most overlooked. I mean, Apple stores today record more sales per square foot than any other retailer. And that's really remarkable when you consider that Apple stores are in very high visibility, very high rent locations. Apple continues to grow the number of Apple stores even during the recession, albeit at a slower pace than when it was before the recession. And Apple stores' employees are paid for their knowledge and their expertise. That means they make more money than their traditional retail employers, who are just basically handling a cash register there. So, if you will, Gary, assess Apple's retail strategy. Is this the most vulnerable part of Apple's business now that Steve Jobs is gone?
No, I don't think it's very vulnerable at all, because, I think it's pretty clear how to carry things forward. You know, he set the standard for what happens in these stores. And, yeah, you know, there were reports that he micromanaged them a lot, even talking about how individual stores are set up and things like that. But you know, I think the basics are all there in place, whereas the technology, you know, for new products, like, you know, the next iPad, the next Mac, you know, there's a lot of decisions to be made. I think moving forward with retail, it's much slower. You know, I don't think any drastic changes need to be made, say, next year or the year after, for Apple to maintain its lead and how it runs its retail stores.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. Now, you mentioned the iPad before as one of the tools or one of the inventions that Steve Jobs came up with, that the book is yet to be written on that. We don't know what the long-term effect is going to be on that. First of all, from your perspective, are sales of the iPad cutting into sales of the Macintosh computer? And what do you see as the ongoing value of the iPad as a computing platform?
Well, yeah, I definitely think they're cutting in sales of the Mac and PCs. But, you know, that's to be expected. They have an overlapping technology. And, you know, I think it's a good thing, because the iPad's being bought where the iPad is the better device, better suited for the need. Like, for instance, in schools, my daughter's school, right after the first, you know, the iPad was released, they asked me questions about Mac stuff, and they asked me, in a few years, what will the Macs have? And I'm like, oh, it's not going to make any difference to you, because you're not going to have Macs in your classroom. They were astounded, like, well, what do you mean? You know, you're the Mac guy. Why are you saying that? And I said, because you're going to have iPads. And they're like, oh, that thing that just came out? Really? And I said, sure. And by the end of that year, they had already decided to switch one grade over to iPads. And I'm sure probably by next year, they'll have decided, you know, all their new computers for all their students will be iPads, not actual computers. So I see it cutting in, but it's a good thing. And Apple is still profiting from the sale there, and they're probably, you know, replacing a certain number of Macs and replacing a lot of PCs in classrooms and in businesses. It's a much more versatile product for a lot of different things, but you didn't really need all that computing power, all the things that come with, you know, it's like a multi-tool, you know, the PC and the Mac. They do so much, and so many people who use them don't really need everything that's in those and they could actually use something where, say, it was more portable or an easier device to use. So, you know, I think it's just going to keep growing in so many different different sectors.
My guest is Gary Rosenzweig. We're talking about the legacy that Steve Jobs left behind at Apple and his impact on society in general. Now, one of the things, Gary, Apple has always been known for is its closed architecture. I mean, the concept was less successful than the combination of Windows operating system and Intel chips and their sort of open architecture approach to computing. And then we saw the closed architecture renamed as an ecosystem with the iPod, the iPhone, and the iPad. So why has the closed architecture succeeded for Apple in the consumer products market where it failed for them in the computing market?
Well, I haven't thought too much about this, but right off the bat, I'd probably say it's all due to price. I mean, the main thing about the open architecture, you know, having clones of PCs come out from different manufacturers and then be able to all throw Windows onto these clones, was that you could have very cheap computers. You know, it was always when I heard somebody buying a computer and telling me why they didn't get a Mac, the price was usually the thing, right? They were able to get a $500
right.
Dell instead of a $1,000 Mac. But with the portable devices, you know, first you had the iPhone being subsidized by carriers, and now you've got a device like the iPad, which is pretty inexpensive. You know, at $500, and the other tablets are priced pretty, you know, accordingly. So you're not seeing that big price difference that you were before by people cloning the hardware. And you still have that with PCs and Macs. You still have that price difference, but you don't have it really with, you know, the devices that compete with iOS now.
All right, that makes sense. I'm going to shift gears on you, Gary, and we're going to talk about the future of Apple's iCloud. That's Apple's version of cloud computing for both the Macintosh and the iPhone, the iPad, and the iPod. Let's talk about what does iCloud mean for Apple, and what direction do you see not only Apple but the rest of the world going in with cloud computing?
Well, I mean, the big thing, I think, is putting MobileMe behind them as a paid service. You know, I had this thing where MobileMe had all these really useful features, like being able to sync data between Macs and stuff, but you had to pay extra for it, and people kind of shied away from that. But a lot of those features, actually pretty much all those syncing features, are going to be in iCloud, and it's going to be free. So it's going, you know, just an additional thing you get when you have not just a Mac, but, you know, any of the iOS devices. And then there's some pretty really cool features. I think people are going to be surprised, like, for instance, Photo Stream. Just being able to take pictures and, you know, it streams onto your account and they're live there, you know, instantly. Take a picture with your iPhone and somebody else can go and look at it right that moment, you know, at another location. That's going to be pretty cool. And just being able to bring this kind of syncing between computers to everybody who uses Apple products, not just the people that go and you know, the extra step and get a MobileMe account.
Do you find that there's any irony in the fact that Steve Jobs and Wozniak both sort of created the personal computer where that broke us away from mainframe computers and even mini computers, allowed us to have more individuality, and now with iCloud we seem to all be going backwards to having one centralized storage place for all of our photos, all of our music, all of our movies, which is a step back towards having a mainframe computer?
All right, yeah, and I suppose there is some sort of irony there. I mean, the processing power is still right there in your hand, right? So you're still able to, you know, do things like, say, video editing or photo editing or word processing, and it's actually taking place locally. But the idea of data, of where your stuff is, that then gets, you know, put in this cloud. I mean, cloud is a great term for it because for most people, they're not going to have to worry about, you know, it's on a server somewhere, you know, and where is it going when I upload, you know, when I take a photo or when I create a document? It's just there. You've got an iPad, an iPhone, and a Mac, and you create a document on one, and it's there on all of them. You buy the song on one, and it's there on all of them. There's kind of this cloud thing, and you don't even have to think of it as being in the cloud or on a server. You just think of it as it's on all your devices. When you access one of your devices, it's there. So the fact that it's on a server really doesn't come into it for normal people. But there's a certain irony to the fact that we're returning to it, to, you know, servers becoming an important part of everyday computing.
Well, I do like the distinction that you drew there. My guest is Gary Rosenzweig. And, Gary, if you had to sum up Steve Jobs' career in a single word or a single phrase, what would that be?
I'd say people have a hard time trying to figure out what title he had, because he wasn't CEO as of August, and he wasn't really CEO, the acting CEO before that, and then he was chairman of the board, and he was a founder, and so, you know, I always just think of him as just, the leader. I call him Apple's leader, because during all the different times he was with Apple, he was essentially the leader of the company, even if he didn't have the title of CEO at that particular moment.
Yeah.
So kind of a leader of technology and a leader of the future.
Well, then that'll be a great way for him to be remembered. My guest has been Gary Rosenzweig. Gary, if people like the sound of your voice and they want to learn more about you, maybe learn more about MacMost, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I just go to MacMost.com, and I've got video tutorials that I put up there and news updates and all sorts of things for Mac and iPad and iPhone users.
Ah, that's great. Gary, thanks so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much.